Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Making and breaking the rules. Crowdfunding sites learn as they go. Hi, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom for today, March 23rd. We're on the final day of our business article this month, Everyone is an Investor. And we're learning about how all of us can invest in different businesses through something new called crowdfunding. I'm Naomi, and I am an investor. Well, only a one-time investor so far. But this article is encouraging me to keep looking for ways that I can support businesses with great vision, great ideas, great potential. And joining me in the studio are a couple of people with all of those things. First of all, Ellen, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
What has stood out to you about this article so far?
Well, I am very impressed with how it pools or it gathers resources for people who want to start businesses or start projects.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very exciting.
Right. I think usually we kind of think in terms of, well, I need one person who has $1,000.
Right. Or we're hoping for that rich aunt or that wealthy aunt or uncle who hopefully left us a very big inheritance.
Okay. Or maybe one of those angel investors that we learned about on the first day.
Right.
But actually, we could also just look for 1,000 people with $1, and that might be easier.
Right.
Now, that wouldn't have been true years ago, but today, a lot of things have changed. And also joining us is Nathaniel. Why do you think it's more of a possibility today?
Well, we do have social networking today, and I mean the internet. The internet opens a lot of roads for this type of thing, for networking, for fundraising in this form online, and making it available to a lot of people who would want to contribute to your cause, to your project.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the biggest organizations that is investing and organizing this kind of investing is Kickstarter. Can you explain a little more about them?
Yeah, Kickstarter is called a crowdfunding group or company where it's an online platform. You go there on the internet. Someone starts basically an account, and you tell people what you're trying to do, and people can decide whether they want to contribute to you on the internet. Now, you will not receive the money if you're trying to fundraise until you reach a stated goal. If you say, I'm going to raise $10,000, you have to find people who are pledging, going to promise that much money. If you don't reach that much money, you don't get any at all.
Right, so usually there's a deadline. They need to raise the money within a certain time frame. If they don't, well, they have to try again another way or another time, but they don't get part of the money. It's all or nothing. Now, we found out yesterday some of the ways that the beneficiaries, the people who are trying to get that money, the people starting the campaigns, the different ways that they're encouraging people to donate.
Right, so people who... The beneficiaries, the people who get the money, some give perks. They give benefits back to people who are donating. And some that we mentioned were signed postcards or Twitter shout-outs or even tours of production sites.
Mm-hmm. Or in many cases, they'll actually give one of the products that they're trying to create.
Right. We talked about iPad keyboards. I know you mentioned your friend with the board game and you received a board game. I'm sure there's lots of examples like that. And sometimes, included in what Ellen mentioned, is just keeping people in the loop, keeping communication going. That's kind of what beneficiaries can give back as well.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually a really important part of this crowdfunding idea, is keeping people in the loop.
Right, right. Effort, they say, is probably the biggest part of it, showing that you're making an effort to keep people involved.
Right. And why is that so important?
Well, I think if you're showing effort and keeping people involved and keeping communication going, it shows you're going to put effort into the work that you're proposing to do as well.
Okay. And I think this is actually one thing that all of us can take away from the concept of this article, that no matter what you're doing, if you're asking people to support you in any way, it's important to keep them informed and to let them know how you're doing, what you're up to, whether you're using a crowdfunding site or just asking people to, you know, encourage you or be your friends or whatever. Keep them updated on how things are going. And so I think that's a really important part of this kind of crowdfunding community. But unfortunately, some people are trying to slip into that community, and they don't really have the best intentions. So let's find out about those scams today as we begin our reading on page 33.
Keeping the scams out. The intersection of crowdsourcing, money, and anonymity afforded by the internet may sound like a cesspool of financial chicanery and frauds, but site operators are sensitive to the perception. Kickstarter's all-or-nothing approach to money, donors aren't charged if campaigns fail to meet their financial goals, helps to minimize fraud, Strickler says. Rocket Hub, a crowdfunding website, allows fundraisers to keep the funds even if they fall short of their goal. But the company saw no need to withhold money because it found 75% of funds raised on its site are from someone you know or others who know people in your network. You have a built-in safety mechanism. People who don't have social capital aren't able to fundraise online, Me says. But scams and never-materialized projects sometimes pop up in crowdfunding. In one notable case, a video game campaign raised nearly $5,000 on Kickstarter before the studio was discovered by forum users at social news website Reddit to be a fraudster. The campaign was eventually canceled by its creator.
So how do you keep the scams out? What is a scam?
A scam is a plan, a dishonest plan, where you're trying to get one up on people or to fool them out of maybe money or time or many other things.
Yeah, often we hear about phone scams, internet scams, these emails that you'll get where the bank apparently needs you to verify your information. You're thinking, wait a second, that doesn't sound right. That's a scam. So how do you prevent scammers from taking advantage of something like Kickstarter or Rocket Hub? We see in our introductory paragraph here, it's a fun one. Starting on line 11, on the right-hand column of page 33, the intersection of three things afforded by the internet can potentially cause some problems. And what are those three things?
Well, we have crowdsourcing that we've been talking about in this article, money, and anonymity. Anonymity just being when you're basically keeping an identity secret. You're not saying who you are exactly.
Okay, good. So that intersection, all those things coming together, they are afforded by the internet. And again, it sounds like a money term, but here it just means the internet makes these things possible. It allows them. And that may sound like what, Ellen?
Like a cesspool of financial chicanery and fraud.
Okay, that's a very fancy way of putting it. First of all, cesspool.
Cesspool is a large underground hole or container that is used for collecting and storing human waste and dirty water.
Ew, that's disgusting.
Yes. It is very dirty. It's not a good, wholesome imagery,
no.
Which is why they use it to describe this financial chicanery, which is just dishonesty.
Okay, sort of this idea of people tricking people and doing something that will mislead people and cause them to probably spend money that they can't spend or spend it on something that doesn't really exist. So this is a big dirty mess, and it can create that kind of situation that unfortunately really stinks. And so, of course, they want to avoid that. They don't want to have this kind of fraud and dishonesty going on online, but it's quite easy for it to happen. However, we see here in line 14.
site operators are sensitive to this perception. They know that people view the internet this way. I mean, how many of us just want to throw out our credit card number or our debit card number on the internet? We're very sensitive to that kind of thing. And the site operators of Kickstarter, they realize that, and they want to make sure there are ways to prevent something bad from happening, like a scam.
Okay. They realize people perceive them that way. They see them that way, and they think, okay, we want to prevent that. So, to begin with, Kickstarter already has a way to prevent this.
Right. As we mentioned before, Kickstarter has an all-or-nothing approach, or their way of doing something, approach to money, which is donors aren't charged if campaigns fail to meet their financial goals. And Strickler says this helps to minimize the fraud.
All right. So if you only raise a few hundred here, a few hundred there, but your goal is several thousand, you won't get any of the money anyway. So that means those little people who sort of just put up a little profile hoping that some fool will spend some money, I mean, they won't make enough to reach their goal anyway. So that won't be an issue. So I think that's great. That's a bit of a safety net there to catch people from spending money on something that isn't real. Next, we see another example starting in line 20.
Yes, and it's an example kind of from a different company. Rocket Hub, a crowdfunding website, allows fundraisers to keep the funds even if they fall short of their goal. So it's kind of on the other side of the coin. It's a very similar kind of situation, but it's a different kind of approach with this company because they will allow people to keep money even if they don't reach that goal.
Okay, so we might be thinking, that sounds dangerous. Why would they make that decision? But according to the co-founder, they don't really think it's necessary to have that kind of system that Kickstarter has.
Right. They've actually found that on their website, 75% of funds were raised from someone you know, or from people that know people you know,
right.
Or people in your network, as we say.
I like that. From people you know, people who know people you know.
Right.
People who know the people who your people know. But it's true. I mean, it's social networking. It does create this kind of web of connections. And like we were talking about before, there's this network that exists. So it kind of creates a safe zone already.
Right. You have a built-in safety mechanism, as is in this quotation here. Of course, a safety mechanism is something kind of built so that something that's dangerous will not happen. I often think of a lawnmower.
Oh.
A lawnmower, which they don't have maybe so much in Asia, but if you're trying to cut your grass in maybe Canada, the United States, you use a lawnmower, this machine that you push along, and you usually have to grab hold of something and squeeze something so that it's working.
Mm-hmm.
And if you trip or something and you end up letting go, it will automatically turn off. That's a kind of safety mechanism.
Excellent example. So it's that sort of little trigger, little part of a machine that prevents it from doing something that might hurt people. And so here, that is the safety mechanism, that people know each other, that this is to do with networking and social connections.
Right. So people who don't have the social capital or the relationships aren't really able to fundraise via this method or this way.
Okay. That's according to the co-founder of Rocket Hub, Brian Meese. So he's saying that people who don't have social capital, and you kind of explained that, but I think it's an interesting way to put it, social capital.
Yeah, we've referred to capital as money before, but here it's not really money, it's social capital, the capital of relationships, of having people in your network to draw from.
Yeah. Okay. So again, I think that's a really fantastic point. You're in an environment where it's all about who you know. It's about, you know, I, for example, when I was supporting my friend Brett with his board game on Kickstarter, I put a link up on my Facebook page so maybe people I knew who thought it was a good idea would also support him. But then again, there's still a connection. They don't know him, but they know me and I know him. And so that's social capital. But as we turn the page over to page 34, we see that scams and never materialized projects do still sometimes pop up. They still appear in crowdfunding. And we see a very unfortunate example.
Right. In one notable case, a video game campaign raised nearly $5,000 on Kickstarter before the studio quote-unquote, which is actually a fake studio, was discovered by forum users as being fake or not real. It's a fraudster.
Okay. It was a fraudster. And that's a fun way of putting it, actually. Someone who gets money by deceiving people is a fraudster. And so they found out it was actually forum users at the social news website Reddit. They looked into it and they said, ha-ha, it's not real. It's a scam. It's a fake. It's a fraud. Get your money back. Don't support them. What eventually happened?
Well, the campaign was eventually canceled by its creators. So these people were trying to scam people out of their money. When they realized that everyone realized what they were trying to do, they closed it down themselves.
Okay. So it sounds like there are a few tricky things about this kind of crowdfunding idea. So they do need to have rules and regulations about it. Let's learn more about those in our final reading.
Rules and regulations. With rulemaking still ongoing, the law lacks details on how investors will be protected. But broadly, it imposes certain rules on funding websites, including a requirement that they refrain from directly handling money or securities. They must hire an intermediary, such as a bank or broker, for such transactions. The funding sites are also prohibited from making security recommendations or promoting a particular company. The banks and brokers are required to conduct background checks of officers or directors holding at least 20% of company shares. A crowdfunding site can also act as an intermediary and hold funds and securities if it registers as a broker. Because most crowdfunded deals are small in size, large brokers could be tempted to cut corners, Rubenstein says. Smaller intermediaries may not have enough resources to meet the requirements, he warns.
So, friends, we're talking about crowdfunding today on Advanced and how this is a new way of raising money that it lets a lot of different people get involved with just a little bit of capital to help people with great ideas get started. So it sounds terrific, but with every new great idea, there are always some details that need to get worked out, some logistical issues that you need to figure out how to handle. And so now we come to rules and regulations there on page 34, beginning on line 8. Rulemaking is still ongoing, so it is still in process, right, Ellen?
Right. Because this is so new, or this concept is so new, the law lacks details on how investors will be protected.
Okay, protected. It kind of makes it sound like you need to wear a safety helmet to be able to give money. What do they mean by that?
Well, ways in which the investor or people who donate money will hopefully not be scammed out of their money.
Right. So like we were just talking about, we want to make sure it's fair that they really are gaining or someone is gaining from this money that's being spent, that it's not just being thrown away. But broadly or more generally, what is it doing?
Well, it does impose certain rules on funding websites. So a lot of things are still under development, but there are some rules that people are already required to follow, including a requirement that they refrain from directly handling money or securities. So these companies, these crowdfunding companies, cannot usually directly have money in their hands that's going from the supporter to the fundraiser.
Good. That term, to refrain from something, is a very polite way of saying, please don't do it.
Right.
So you might hear it or see it on signs or in announcements in theaters. Please refrain from using your cell phone, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't handle the actual cash and so on. What do they have to do exactly?
They must hire an intermediary, or earlier we mentioned a middleman, somebody who goes in between the websites and the donors, such as a bank or a broker, who is a person who acts or represents you when you're purchasing things, and then they will do the work in between.
Okay, so they can't just say, oh, just send us your money and we'll make sure it's fine. The law says, no, you need to involve a professional, someone who professionally handles money so that we know definitely everything is legitimate, everything is clear, and no one has any questions about what's going on. I think that's wise, and I'm glad to hear that they do have rules like this. And there's another rule that's mentioned at the end of this paragraph.
Yeah, the funding sites are also prohibited, also kind of like having to refrain from something, prohibited from making security recommendations or promoting a particular company. We could see that if a funding website was going to promote a particular company, they could possibly manage to extract money from some kind of deal like that.
Right. So if you want to pay using, some kind of bond or some kind of program, they can't say, oh, well, this site is a great one to use. Try this bank. Try this creditor. You know, they're saying, no, you can't promote those people. You have to just make sure everything is equal and fair. So again, I don't think that's a bad idea. It just helps things stay very clear, very focused. In the next paragraph, we see that there are rules for the banks and brokers involved as well.
Right. They are required, or they have to, conduct background checks, which are just investigations or checks into seeing whether somebody is honest.
Yes. Have you ever had to get a background check?
Well, in the United States, every time you apply for a job or they're considering you for a job, they will conduct a background check.
Mm. I've had to go to police stations and get like an official background check from the police to say, no, she has never been arrested for anything, you know, with certain organizations I've worked for. It's interesting to do it. And I think it's a good idea just so you know exactly what's going on with people and how much you can trust them. In this case, they don't have to do that with every single person who invests money.
No. It's background checks of officers or directors holding at least 20% of company shares. So it's not everyone. There is a certain standard there.
Okay. So it's just people who have a little more more sway, more influence, who are a little bit more powerful in these organizations that need to have those. Now, it can potentially, the sites themselves can potentially handle the money.
Right. If these sites register as a broker, then they can actually work with the money as well.
Okay. So if it's a big site, it might be worthwhile. It sounds like, I don't know, I think I would rather just trust someone who's already been doing it before, because then they can also see if there's some issue, they're more likely to spot it than if you just register yourself.
Yeah. I mean, even if you trust a company like Kickstarter, it kind of just seems like a distant or a big company that, especially if you don't have a lot of experience with, you might want a more personal connection with a broker or a bank that you have trusted and worked with in the past. Yeah.
Right. Sometimes I think we use the word transparent. Mm. You know, when something is transparent, you're able to follow where the money goes very easily.
Good. Yeah. And I think it's always wise for anyone who's, especially if you're starting a new business, there's a good chance you aren't really familiar with how it all goes, you know. And so it's always a good idea to check in with other people who maybe have a little more experience, a little bit of a different background. They can maybe help you out and make sure that you're doing things right. In our final paragraph, we see that most crowdfunded deals are very small in size. And so what does that mean?
Well, it means that large brokers could actually be tempted to cut corners or not do everything that they have to do.
Okay. Can you give me another example of cutting corners?
Sometimes construction companies, to save money, they'll cut corners, so they might not use the best material to build something. Ends up being compromising or putting people in danger instead.
Right. If they use less or goods that are less high in quality, it can actually affect the safety of a building.
Right.
And so you'll read stories about this. Oh, the company wanted to save money, and so they cut corners. Very dangerous. And here it's possible, too, and especially when we are looking at smaller transactions and smaller businesses.
Because we're not as likely to expect something to happen there, or at least it doesn't seem as important if something does. So the small kind of transaction, a small deal is going down, it might be more likely for money to be taken out of that illegally than in a more attention-grabbing kind of deal.
Okay, good. And again, smaller intermediaries. So intermediaries, again, being another word for like the middleman. They might not have all the resources that they need to really be able to do this well.
Right. Because they are smaller, they might not have the finances or the capital to be able to conduct these
transactions.
Okay.
But despite that, despite the fact that the rules are still being made and we're still learning exactly how this is going to work, we see that there are some success stories. And in our photographs on these pages, we have a couple of examples of people who have really made it work. Can you tell us about one of them, Nathaniel?
Yeah, on the bottom of page 33, we see Maria Riggs. She works in her Revolution Donut store in Decatur, Georgia, and she was able to open her shop through Kickstarter. So she has a kind of a restaurant, at least she's selling food, and it's this crowdfunding website that lets small entrepreneurs like her get started on creative projects like this.
Very exciting, and we can see she's got a lot of customers in line, so it seems to be working out really well for Maria. What about on page 34, Ellen?
Well, on page 34, we see Sasha Cano, who also used a crowdfunding website Kickstarter to fund Farm Lot 59 in Long Beach, California. And she did this to transform some land in that city into a one-acre biodynamic urban farm.
Very creative. So basically, there was this big piece of land that no one was using for anything, and she thought, hey, I can do something with this.
Right, exactly.
Okay, and so far so good. She's on her way. I'm sure you could Google her and see how it's going. Look for progress. I also suggest that you check out some sites like Rocket Hub and Kickstarter and see if you would ever want to invest in anything you find there. Personally, I'm starting to think maybe next time I have a business idea, I'll want to sign up on here and start my own campaign. Do you have any campaign ideas, Ellen?
At the moment, no, but I have recommended it now to some friends now that I know more about it.
Yeah. Okay, good. Nathaniel, are you signing up anytime soon?
not too soon, but I am glad that I heard about this because there is the potential that I might actually want to use this in the future as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks everyone for being with us. I hope you enjoyed this article as much as we did, and we'll see you again for another one soon. Until then, this is Naomi.
This is Ellen.
And this is Nathaniel.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye.